ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय. एज इट इज चैप्टर 14 एंटाइटल्ड द थ्री मोड्स ऑफ मटेरियल नेचर टेक्स्ट नंबर 26. मम च यो अव्यभिचारेण भक्ति योगेन सेवते सगुणान् समतीत्यैतान् ब्रह्म भूयाय कल्पते. Mam, unto me. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Purport: This verse is a reply to Arjuna's third question. What is the means of attaining to the transcendental position? As explained before, the material world is acting under the spell of the modes of material nature. One should not be disturbed by the activities of the modes of nature. Instead of putting his consciousness into such activities, he may transfer his consciousness to Krishna activities. Krishna activities are known as Bhakti Yoga, always acting for Krishna. This includes not only Krishna, but his different plenary expansions such as Ram and Narayan. He has innumerable expansions. One who is engaged in the service of any of the forms of Krishna or of his plenary expansions is considered to be transcendentally situated. One should also note that all the forms of Krishna are fully transcendental, blissful, full of knowledge and eternal. Such personalities of Godhead are omnipotent and omniscient, and they possess all transcendental qualities. So, if one engages himself in the service of Krishna or his plenary expansions with unfailing determination, although these modes of material nature are very difficult to overcome, one can overcome them easily. This has already been explained in the 7th chapter. One who surrenders unto Krishna at once surmounts the influence of the modes of material nature. To be in Krishna consciousness or in devotional service means to acquire equality with Krishna. The Lord says that His nature is eternal, blissful and full of knowledge, and the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme as gold particles are part of a gold mine. Thus, the living entity, in his spiritual position, is as good as gold, as good as Krishna in quality. The difference of individuality continues. Otherwise, there would be no question of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga means that the Lord is there, the devotee is there, and the activity of exchange of love between the Lord and the devotees is there. Therefore, the individuality of two persons is present in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual person. Otherwise, there would be no meaning to Bhakti Yoga. If one is not situated in the same transcendental position with the Lord, one cannot serve the Supreme Lord. To be a personal assistant to a king, one must acquire the qualifications. Thus, the qualification is to become Brahman, or freed from all material contamination. It is said in the Vedic literature, Brahmaiva san Brahmapi eti. One can attain the supreme Brahman by becoming Brahman. This means that one must qualitatively become one with Brahman. By attainment of Brahman, one does not lose his eternal Brahman identity as an individual soul. माम च यो अव्यभिचारेण भक्ति योगेन सेवते सगुणान् समतीत्यैतान् ब्रह्म भूयाय कल्पते. ट्रांसलेशन: वन हू एंगेजेस इन फुल डिवोशनल सर्विस अनफेलिंग इन ऑल सर्कमस्टेंसेस एट वंस ट्रांसेंड्स द मोड्स ऑफ मटेरियल नेचर एंड दस कम्स टू द लेवल ऑफ ब्रह्मन. हरे कृष्णा. सो In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna basically covers 5 different topics. That is Jiva, the living entity. Who are the living entities? Who we are? Who is Ishvara, or who is the Supreme Lord? Then he speaks about karma, or what the activities are of the living entities. And then he speaks about kala, or time. And then prakriti, or material nature. So a person who may not be a student of the Bhagavad Gita, he also knows these topics basically. Every one of us has some understanding of what time is. Everyone has some concept of who we are. I am so and so, I do so and so things, etc., etc. Everyone has some concept of who God is. Everyone has some concept of what prakriti or material nature is. And everyone has some concept of what karma or activities are. But Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives the right understanding of what is time. What is the true understanding of time? Who is truly God? What is the right concept of God? What is the right concept of who we are? And in this particular chapter, the 14th chapter, he gives the right understanding of what material nature is, what nature is. Now in this world, people extensively, especially the scientists, they try to understand what this nature is all about. In terms of atoms and molecules. And the whole of modern civilization is geared towards how to control and manipulate the different aspects of nature around us. To lead a comfortable life in this world. That is what modern civilization is all about. How to manipulate nature for our convenience. And the scientists are working day and night. The technocrats are working day and night. So that is our concept of nature. How to enjoy nature. But here in this chapter, Krishna gives a true understanding of what material nature is. Our concept of material nature means how I can control nature, how I can enjoy nature. That is what scientific advancement is. How to control nature, how to control temperature, or how to control humidity, all these factors, external factors, how to control nature. But Krishna gives the right understanding in this chapter, and he tells us that it is not that we are controlling nature, but material nature is controlling us. And so he brings forth the concept of guna, the 3 gunas. Now, guna is something which we have never heard of, actually. Most of us, before we started studying Bhagavad Gita, we never heard of this word guna at all. What is this? Sattva guna, rajo guna, tamo guna. Hardly anyone knows. We might have heard of time. We might have heard of some concept of soul, but we have never heard of what this guna or the 3 gunas are, sattva guna, rajo guna and tamo guna. Why? Because we have no understanding that actually material nature is controlling our lives. Guna also means rope. So Krishna is giving us an understanding that in this world, we are bound by ropes, invisible ropes. And we are controlled by invisible ropes, and we are being pulled here and there by these invisible ropes.
That is prakriti. Krishna gives us the understanding. Material nature means it consists of ropes that is binding us, and these ropes are pulling us here and there. The invisible ropes. Now we might wonder, you know, I don't feel that I am being pulled around by ropes. But yes, we are being pulled by ropes here and there. It's a fact. Say, for example, on a weekend, so many people might be working in the same office. But during the weekend, different people will be pulled towards different places for spending the weekend. Some people will be pulled towards some hill resort. Some people will be pulled towards maybe some theater or movies. Some people will be pulled towards maybe the beach. And some people will be pulled towards maybe the bar, the liquor bar. Now, why don't all people go to the same place? No, they are being pulled to different places. Or maybe there is a buffet, dinner. So many items are kept on the table. Why is it that not everyone comes to the same item and everyone eats the same item? No. Different people are pulled towards different items. Some people are pulled towards ice creams. Some are pulled towards sweets. Some people are pulled towards fried items, some towards pungent items. So they are being pulled. And we call these pulls, conveniently we call it inclinations. You know, I like it. I like such and such eatables. Or I like to go to such places. Actually, it's a pull, but we call it inclination in everyday language. Now, why don't we feel the pull actually, you know? I can think of one example. Suppose you have a goat, you know, and you tie a rope to the goat's neck, and you are taking the goat to a slaughterhouse. Suppose. So you are taking this goat to a slaughterhouse. The goat generally follows you wherever you take him. Now when the goat is closely following you, the rope will be very loose. And the goat won't feel the rope around its neck. Right? But the fact is, it is being bound by that rope and it is carried by that rope to different destinations. But because it is readily going with the master, it cannot feel the pull of the rope. But when will the goat feel the pull of the rope? When it will resist the movement of the master. The master is trying to take him in a certain direction, but the goat refuses to go. It resists the movement, and then it can feel the pull, and then it can understand that actually I am being bound by a rope. So similarly, in the name of inclinations, we are being pulled towards different activities, different kinds of eatables, and different things in this world. And because we readily accept this inclination and we become ready to act according to these inclinations, we don't feel that we are being bound by ropes. But one day you try to not act according to that inclination, then we will feel that force. It's like a drunkard. His inclination is to go and drink in a bar. But when he understands that it is not good for me, then he will resist that temptation. And when he tries to resist that inclination, then he will feel the pull. Then he will understand that there is some rope pulling me. So Krishna is opening our eyes to the fact that all of us are being bound by ropes of material nature. And bound by these ropes, we tend to perform certain activities. We become attracted to certain things, to certain persons. We become inclined to certain things, certain foodstuffs, certain musics. We are being pulled in different directions. And because we readily go in any direction in which we are being pulled, we don't feel the presence of the rope. But Krishna in this chapter, he makes us understand that in whatever direction the rope pulls you, if you readily go in that direction, you are sure to end in misery. So Krishna says, in this material world, whatever our inclination could be towards any kind of activities, the end result is bound to be misery. So to speak, we are like goats who are unresistingly going towards the slaughterhouse. And Krishna tells, the first thing to do is understand that you have to resist yourself. If we continue to act the way we are acting in this world, we are going to put ourselves in more and more miseries. And Krishna calls this world Dukkhalayam. Like you have got Pustakalay. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Bhagavan ki. Like you have got Pustakalay. Pustakalay means a library. In a library, in whichever direction you go, you will find books. Big library. Whichever direction, wherever you go, first floor, second floor, third floor, wherever we go, we will find books everywhere. Similarly, Krishna says, in whatever direction you lead your life in this world, the end result is bound to be misery. So just because we have got certain inclinations in life and we tell, I like it. And just because we like it, we engage in certain activities. And these activities Krishna classifies as activities in sattva-guna, activities in rajoguna, activities in tamoguna. Different kinds of activities. But whatever activities you engage in this world, the end result is going to be misery. Krishna assures us. So the first thing we have to understand is, first I have to change the course of my activities. It's not that simply because I got certain inclinations in life and I follow those inclinations, I'll become happy. No. So what is to be done now? All directions leads to misery. So Krishna, in this verse, he gives us a way out. So the first stage is coming to the understanding that we are bound by ropes and we are being pulled in different directions. And we have to resist being pulled by the rope. So when we resist ourselves being pulled by a rope, we will feel the rope tightening. And we feel the pressure of the rope, the pull of the rope, because the rope is now tight. At least we have to come to that stage. Now, so in this particular verse, Krishna gives us a solution of how to become freed from this bondage of material existence. how to become freed from these ropes that are binding us. These ropes which pull us in different directions towards different activities which always end in misery. What are the activities we are supposed to perform then? So Krishna gives us an understanding here. And Krishna says, one who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Mam chayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. Krishna gives us a solution in the Bhagavad Gita. This world is dukkhale. In whatever direction you will go, you will find yourself in misery. Do one thing. Engage in my devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, and I assure you that you will be freed from all misery and trouble. Just engage in my devotional service, Krishna says. And time and again, Krishna gives the same solution in the Bhagavad Gita. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupasate. He says, then he says, mam chayo avyabhicharena. And towards the end of the Gita, he says, sarva dharmant prityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. So he gives the same solution. Just become my devotee and work for me. Serve me. Focus your mind on me. But whenever Krishna tells this, there is always a clause. And what is that? He is telling, mam chayo avyabhicharena. Now, vyabhichar means, you know, vyabhichar, it basically means to not be faithful to one's marriage partner. So, a person who is a vyabhichari, he seeks out different relationships apart from his husband or wife, you know, his or her husband or wife. So he's not fixed on one person. He's not faithful to one person. So he's seeking pleasure with relationship with different people. Such a person is a vyabhichari. So Krishna is demanding from us avyabhicharini bhakti. That means we have to be completely faithful to Krishna alone. Krishna doesn't want us to divert our attention to anything or anyone else except Him alone. So Krishna is telling here, without deviation to anything or anyone else, focus your full attention on me and simply engage in my devotional service. And rest assured that you will gain complete happiness. Have faith in me. And Krishna demands that faith from us. That we completely be faithful to Him and engage in His service without deviation. And this demand of Krishna comes time and again. Ananyas chintayanto mam. Anya means something else. Ananya. Nothing else, Krishna says. You should not think of anything else. Ananyas chintayanto mam. You should simply think of me. Without thinking of anything else. Ananyas chintayanto mam. Again Krishna demands that kind of focus on Him. Only serve Krishna. Only focus your mind on Krishna. Nothing else. That is the method Krishna gives. To become freed from the ropes that bind us. And which drag us to different miseries of life. And towards the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna again makes this final command to us. Sarva dharman prityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me alone. Nothing else except me. And Krishna knows that this is something fearful for a living entity. only Krishna, nothing else. Many times it's scary, because our experience in this world is we tend to gain little bit happiness from here and there. And we don't have, it's hard for the living entity to put that faith that simply by worshipping Krishna, simply by serving Krishna, all my miseries will be gone and I'll become happy. Basically, the propensity of every living entity is ananda mayobhyasat. We are all seeking happiness in this world. And we seek happiness in different ways. We seek happiness through entertainment. We seek happiness through our job. Some seek happiness in their studies. And we seek happiness in different kinds of things and different kinds of activities. But Krishna is here demanding here, seek happiness simply in serving me. Have the faith that simply by serving me, you'll become happy. That's a little difficult. How can we put complete faith in Krishna? Krishna tells, give up everything. Know this from me 100%, that if you simply focus on me, and if you simply engage in my service, you'll become happy simply by this one activity. And we have no experience of this world of becoming happy by one single activity. We need change. We work for some time. After working in the office for a whole week, then we need a change on the weekend. So then, when the weekend is too long, or when the holidays are too long, we become bored again. Again, we want to come back to office. So in this way, we seek happiness in different kinds of activities and different kinds of things. We need change. We seek happiness in different kinds of songs. If someone is told, simply hear the same song throughout your life, that is scary. Because we tend to seek happiness in variety, different things. And here Krishna is telling, just me alone. So this becomes very difficult for the living entity. He becomes fearful. What is this Krishna asking from me? Give up everything and just come to me? Focus on me alone? After some time, if Krishna becomes boring, then what? Start wondering. And this is Krishna's demand. And Krishna knows that a person will become fearful. So in this verse, he says, abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender unto me. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshesyami ma sucha, he says, don't fear, don't fear. So we see in the Bhagavad Gita that time and again Krishna gives us that assurance. I am the one source of complete happiness and bliss for every living entity. Simply if we make that decision of avyabhicharini bhakti, one-pointed focus on Krishna, rest assured, all our miseries will be over and we'll enjoy eternal bliss. Krishna gives us that assurance and he says that is the only method of becoming freed from all miseries. There is no other way. At this point of time, I would like to tell one story. That in 2006, a Russian military officer, Colonel Petrov, he was awarded the World Citizen Award. The World Citizen Award in the United Nations in 2006. And he was given the title, the man who averted the nuclear war. Why? Because in 1983, Colonel Petrov was the lieutenant officer at a military bunker near Moscow, south of Moscow. And he had 120 people under him. And he was in charge of monitoring the possibility of any nuclear attacks. So he had all the equipments and he had the connection with all satellites to detect any possible military attacks from enemies, especially the United States at that particular point of time. Because in 1983, the Cold War was very intense. During that period, Ronald Reagan, the president of the United States, had made a statement that the USSR is an evil empire. And then there were, you know, a Korean jet passenger was being brought down by the Russian military. And in this way, there was a lot of tension between the United States and the Soviet Union. The Cold War was at its peak. And it was expected that there could be attack at any moment. So on 26 September 1983, at night, when Petrov was in his station, suddenly the red button started glowing and the sign read start, and there were lights which are flashing in all directions, which indicated that the Soviet Union was under attack by the United States ballistic missiles, nuclear missiles. And there was a big map of the United States. And one particular US base also lit up, indicating that the missiles were launched from that particular US base. So Petrov, all of a sudden, the signals indicated to him, the entire equipment and the machinery indicated that the missiles had been launched, the nuclear missiles had been launched from the United States. And at any moment, the Soviet Union could be destroyed. For the next 5 minutes, Colonel Petrov was tense. He had a phone in one hand and an intercom in the other. And he didn't know what to do, whether to believe it or not. Whether the equipment was at fault, or whether truly the Soviet Union was under attack. But somehow he believed within his heart that it was a false alarm. He had that conviction. Somehow he felt that no, it is a false alarm. The Soviet Union is not under attack. And after 5 minutes, he called up his base, telling that it's a false alarm. If he had told it's the true alarm, there would be attack from the Soviet Union to the United States immediately. The USSR would have launched nuclear missiles towards the United States immediately. If he had told or informed that it's a true alarm. So Petrov didn't know that it's a false alarm. But somehow, he made that decision. He did that brave decision that it's a false alarm. And after informing that it's a false alarm, all he could do was wait for the next 15 to 20 minutes in suspense. If it is true, then they would be finished. If not, nothing would happen. And after 15 to 20 minutes, suddenly it came to his understanding that actually it was a false alarm. If he had not taken that decision, if he had informed that it's a true alarm, then there would be a full swing nuclear war on the 26th September 1983 and the whole world would be destroyed. And because he took that brave decision, even though he didn't know it was a false alarm, but He had that conviction it's a false alarm. Because of that, he was awarded in the year 2006 as the World He was awarded with a World Citizen Award title. So, how do we understand concepts of the Bhagavad Gita from this particular incident? Now, Colonel Petrov, logically, if you analyze his reaction to this alarm, that was the most intelligent thing that he could do. Suppose the alarm were true. What would happen? They would be destroyed. Now, regardless of whether he thought the alarm is right or wrong, he would be destroyed nonetheless. But if we consider it as a wrong alarm, then he can avert a nuclear war. Isn't it? So the wise thing to do is take the second decision of considering it a false alarm. Because if we consider it a true alarm, then there is no benefit from that decision. Whether he reacted or didn't react, the end result is going to be the same, that is death. But if he thought it is a false alarm, and if it were truly a false alarm, then the end result will be he has averted a nuclear war. So what he did was the most logical thing that anyone could do. It was a wise decision. It was a right choice. One choice anyway meant death, whether true or false. But the other choice, if it were the wrong choice, what can be done? But nonetheless, if it were the right choice, then glory. Hope you are understanding the logic behind it. So it was the most intelligent thing that Petrov could do. Similarly, we, the living entities in this world, just like Petrov faced these flashing lights and an alarm, which actually instigated him to counterattack. Similarly, the various things in this world tempt us with promises of happiness. So many things, they tempt us. Do this. Strive for this. Think about this and you'll become happy. The world is filled with such allurements and temptations like flashing lights all around us, instigating us to react and take the decision of seeking happiness in that way. Now, whether we react positively or not, the end result is going to be misery and death in the end. So many people are striving for happiness in this world. From morning to evening, people are so busy, traveling, working in their offices. What is the purpose? To become happy. They're all reacting to the different temptations of material nature to become happy in this world. Different methods, the different temptations. But at the end of the day, can we say that people are happy in this world? There is so much of misery in this world. What is the proof? Tomorrow morning, if you have got 2 rupees, you buy a newspaper. Only 2 rupees is required to come to the understanding that the world is filled with miseries. Just 2 rupees, buy a newspaper. The newspaper is filled with miserable news. Problem here, problem there, problem everywhere. Either misery is going on, or there is future misery that is going to happen. News of future misery or present misery or past misery. That is what the newspaper is filled with. That is the new thing every morning. News means what? The new thing every morning is that there is misery in this world. So we see, people are reacting positively to the flashlights of the different temptations of becoming happy. But the end result is misery anyways, whether you react or you don't react. So Krishna, he gives us the advice, don't react. And instead, what you do? Just like Colonel Petrov, all he did was, he didn't react and he had patience. So Krishna says, don't react and fix your mind on me, engage in my devotional service and have patience. And you see, in due course of time, you'll be rewarded. That is Krishna's promise. So that is the most brilliant thing to do. So far in our life, we thought that we would become happy by different things. We responded to the promises of happiness from all quarters. But whenever we reacted to these promises, maybe we got little happiness, but in due course of time, who can say that we are actually permanently happy, eternally happy? Something promises us happiness, but the same thing in due course of time becomes a source of misery. The same object which was promising happiness becomes a source of misery in due course of time. That is the sad reality of this world. So there might be temporary happiness, but there is no permanent happiness anywhere. In the end, there is always misery in whatever direction we go. So Krishna says, stop trying to be happy by different ways and by different endeavors. Because this world is dukkhalayam. There is only distress everywhere, all directions, everywhere. Only way of becoming happy is focus your mind on me and engage in my devotional service alone. But when we do this, when we take this decision and we don't react to the different flashing lights of different promises, we have to have a little patience. Patience is required. And with patience, here Prabhupada says, with unfailing determination. So the mind will tell us different methods of becoming happy, but we should know. Only when I focus all my desires around Krishna, only when I focus my mind on Krishna, only when I engage in Krishna conscious activities, can I become happy. Krishna doesn't say that we have to change our activities, but we have to fix our consciousness on Krishna. So Arjuna, he was a warrior. And even Duryodhana was a warrior. But while Duryodhana was fighting, what was his concept of happiness? What was the reason he was fighting? He was thinking that by fighting he will gain a kingdom, and by gaining a kingdom he will become happy. So his direction of becoming happy, of wanting to become happy, was by gaining a kingdom. But Arjuna, he didn't fall to that temptation. He didn't feel that by gaining a kingdom I will become happy. No. Then why was he fighting? He was fighting because Krishna told him to fight. He was fighting as a service to Krishna. Krishna told him, you fight under me. It's a service to me. So you please fight. So Arjuna fought as a service to Krishna, with the intention of pleasing Krishna through his fighting. And so he became happy. He became truly happy, and Duryodhana became miserable. Even if Duryodhana had won a kingdom, he would be miserable nonetheless. So Krishna says, know for sure, externally, whatever our activities might be, mind should be focused on Krishna. And we should be convinced of the fact that only by serving Krishna only, and only by pleasing Krishna, only by giving happiness to Krishna, only by developing a relationship with Krishna, can we become happy. And Krishna, he demands this from us. You do this, and then you will be freed from all miseries. But to do it requires some patience. Just like Colonel Petrov, the example you were giving, for those 15-20 minutes, he was totally in a confused state. But he stuck to his determination that I won't consider it a true alarm at all. I'll continue to consider it a false alarm. He stuck to that conviction. Even though it was difficult for him. But because he had that patience with that conviction, he was awarded in due course of time. And he's still famous. He's an old man now, but he's very famous because he saved the world. Similarly, someone who makes this bold decision of practicing unflinching, unfailing devotional service to Krishna, he'll be awarded in due course of time. No doubt about it. Krishna assures us that someone who makes this decision of simply serving me, of simply focusing his mind and attention on me, someone who makes this decision of not diverting his attention to anything else, he is very dear to me and he'll be awarded in due course of time. Because it's also an act of affection in one sense. You know? It's like an employee is working under a company and the company is undergoing so many losses, and that fellow, he may not even get salary for 1 or 2 months, but still he remains faithful to that company and doesn't leave the company and continues working in that company. So because that employee exhibited that patience and that faith in the company becomes obliged to that worker. So in the future, even though the employee may not be so productive, the company won't abandon him. Why? Because this fellow, he was faithful even under trying circumstances. So that's a sign of affection. And the owner becomes obliged. So similarly, while serving Krishna with one-pointed attention, we might be tempted to seek happiness in other ways. But if we resist those temptations and we stick to Krishna alone and continue serving Krishna, even though the other temptations are there, just like this employee might have temptations to join other companies, but he resists those temptations. Similarly, a devotee of the Lord, when he resists temptations of seeking happiness in different ways and sticks to serving Krishna under all circumstances, Krishna becomes obliged to that devotee. He feels, this person, he has so much faith in me. He's continuing in my devotional service, having faith in my words. Because Krishna has promised in the Bhagavad Gita, do this, and we are doing it. So Krishna becomes obliged. And he's extremely pleased and he becomes indebted to that person. So devotee, through his act of faithfulness, through his act of unflinching and unwavering devotional service, he actually conquers the heart of Krishna. Because Krishna feels that this person, He's sticking to my devotional service under all circumstances. That was the beauty of the Pandavas. The Pandavas got into various kinds of troubles in life, but they never gave up the service of Krishna under any situation. And Krishna was actually conquered and defeated by the affection and love of the Pandavas. He was conquered by that faith. So that is the beauty of devotional service, that it conquers the Lord. So simply if we put faith in Krishna's words, simply if we believe in Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita and try to follow it, Krishna immediately becomes happy. It's like any parent. If the parent gives some advice to the son, now he perhaps he wants to do something, and the parents say, "You see, don't do this. Have faith in me, just do what I say." So the son, if he puts faith in his parent, believes his parent, the parent becomes obliged to the son. "Oh, this fellow, he put faith in me." So that affectionate bondage increases. The relationship between the son and the father increases when there is trust and faith. Similarly, Krishna, he tells in the Bhagavad Gita, all these different ways of trying to become happy, it doesn't actually work. Simply serve me and focus your attention on me. You'll become happy. If you simply believe in this particular instruction of Krishna, simply by putting faith in Krishna, Krishna becomes happy. Krishna is conquered. And this act strengthens the bond between the jiva, the soul, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The affection between Krishna and the living entity increases. And then the relationship becomes stronger, just like the relationship between the son and the parent. When the more stronger it becomes, the more the interaction between the two. When the son doesn't put trust and faith in the parent and does whatever he wants to do, then slowly the relationship loosens and the interaction between the two also reduces. They meet once in a week, once in a month, once in a year. It happens. But when there is trust and faith, the relationship becomes stronger and they start meeting more and more often. So similarly, when we believe in the instructions of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita and when we try to follow those instructions as given in the Bhagavad Gita, slowly our relationship with the Supreme Lord increases. It becomes stronger. The affection becomes increases. Krishna becomes obliged. "This person has put faith in my words. I have to reciprocate with him. He has believed me. So I have to do something in his life which indicates my presence and my hand in his life." And so the interaction between the soul and the Supreme Lord goes on increasing. In this world, people ask, "Why can't I see God?" It's just like the son doesn't have any trust and faith in his parents, and the relationship has broken, and now the father is living somewhere, the son is living somewhere else, and how will they see each other? Not possible. Only when there is a relationship of faith, love, and trust will they see each other. So similarly, we can see God or Krishna the more we develop relationship with him. And that relationship begins when we learn to put faith in his instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, when we believe what he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that is the beginning of that affection, the beginning of that love, the beginning of that bondage between the Supreme Lord and the living entity. Simply believing in what Krishna says and striving to follow whatever we can. Whatever we can, we should try to follow. And that small beginning, Krishna recognizes. Oh, this fellow is striving to re-establish this relationship. So let me reciprocate. And Krishna reciprocates in different ways. The father may not be able to meet the son immediately, but the father begins by sending gifts to the son. Something like that happens between the devotee and the Supreme Lord also. So if we want to see God, if we want to develop a relationship with God, if we want to end all the miseries of life, then the beginning is begin to hear from the Lord. First of all, we have to hear what the Lord has to say. Then put faith in what he says, believe what he says, and start following his instruction. But first of all, we have to start hearing what he says. Krishna has spoken 700 verses in the Bhagavad Gita for our benefit. So the beginning of this affectionate relationship is we hear to him. The son has to first hear to what the father has to say. Then there is the question of putting faith in him or believing the father. First of all, he has to hear what the father has to say at all. So the first step is to hear from Krishna, what Krishna is trying to tell us. Then when we believe in what Krishna says, when we put faith in his instructions, that time the affectionate relationship between us and the Supreme Lord begins. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Any questions anyone has? Yes. You can come here and... Miseries won't come in. If we follow Krishna's instructions totally, miseries will stop coming immediately. Miseries immediately will stop coming. But what happens is we follow instructions partially. So miseries will continue to come partially. If we totally follow Krishna's instructions, then miseries will cease coming from today. So, because even those who might be following the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita may not be following it totally. To the extent we follow it totally, to that extent miseries will stop coming. That is what Krishna says. Okay? Now, bhakti, karmani nirdhati kintuja bhakti bhajam. The Brahmat Samhita says, all one's karmic reactions are immediately destroyed as soon as one takes to devotional service to Krishna. That is the power of devotional service. So, bahunam janmanamante, someone who is trying to seek the process of self-realization by his own endeavors, for him it will take him many, many births. But one who tries to seek self-realization by surrendering to Krishna and to his devotees who come in parampara, Krishna immediately takes charge of such a person. So someone who is following the process of jnana, of trying to understand by his own endeavors what is the truth, for him it will take many lifetimes. But someone who doesn't take to the path of jnana, but who takes to the path of bhakti yoga, that is immediately surrendering to Krishna, he is released from karma immediately. He doesn't have to take birth again. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo vetti tattvata tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti swarjuna. If one understands who Krishna is, Krishna's birth, activities, pastimes, and understands that Krishna is the supreme controller of even laws of karma, and if he surrender to Krishna, then immediately he can be released from the cycle of birth and death. Krishna is not bound by the law of karma. He is the lawmaker. So Krishna is the maker of the laws of karma. Because he is the maker of the laws, if we surrender to him, he can nullify the laws. It's like the king makes the laws. So even though we might do some wrong activities, if we surrender to the king has the right to nullify the reaction. He has the power to nullify the reaction. On our own, we cannot. Similarly, Krishna is a supreme king and he has made all the laws of karma. So we might be having a lot of karma, lot of sinful reactions with us. But if we surrender to Krishna, Krishna has the power to nullify all karma. That is the verdict of the scriptures. And that is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also. Sarva dharman prityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo. He said, I will release you from all sinful activities. Where is the question of karma then? And Krishna says, if you surrender to me, I will release you. That is the point. We have to have faith in these instructions of Krishna. We should not think that karma is more powerful than Krishna. Krishna has the power to nullify all kinds of karma. And with that faith, when we surrender to Krishna, we become freed from all karmas and we become freed from all miseries. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.